The March 31st meeting of Education Finance will please come to order. This is an unofficial call, as we do not have a quorum yet, but I'd like to call Representative Sikora to the testifiers table to begin an explanation of House File 1744. Welcome, Representative Sikora. Maybe you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 1744.
And we'll just have it before us until the meeting's official.
I think most of you are pretty familiar. This is what we call the Quality Compensation Bill. And I think this is the Finance Committee. We had a long hearing in policy and a lot of discussion on what it was and what it could be, how it might work, et cetera. So I think today I'll very briefly, you know, describe how I see this, and then we can go on to talk about any of the fiscal issues that you may have with the bill. Now, we've had an alternative comp program going here, or attempt to get alternative compensation going now for a number of years. We have a few out there that are going, and that we have heard something about here and there. And for the most part, they haven't really caught on in general. I think maybe the real difference between this proposal, the quality comp proposal in this bill, and what we've had before is this one maybe has a little different focus on the way it focuses on teachers and career opportunities for teachers, professional development opportunities for teachers, how we would do a fair type of evaluation, and then how we would look at student achievement or school site achievement, et cetera, in light of a compensation. This takes the basic elements that were developed by the Milken Foundation, which is based on a good deal of research, and had very high levels of teacher satisfaction. And also, in the 5 years that they've been doing it, they've begun to see real improvement in terms of learning by students. So this is one of the governor's initiatives, something that I've been very interested in for a long time, and I attended a seminar last summer that dealt with this program and how it worked and how it was being funded in different areas. So I think what it requires that is very important is that the board and superintendent and the teachers' union and the teachers in the district all work together to develop a plan that will work. There's a few guidelines, and then beyond that, there's great flexibility in how the program is designed. So the money that we have put into it, it takes a while to ramp up to it. So there's $10 million in it next year. There's also the $7 million that has been the ongoing alternative comp, $3.5 million per year. And then in the second year of the biennium, there's another $74 million for school districts who decide to go into this, who get the agreement and decide to take the step and get into this program. So knowing that, you know, many districts will not be ready to do that in a year or two, there's not money for every single district. But there's quite a bit of money out there enough to support at least half the students in the state if their districts are interested in doing it. So with that, I think I would quit and ask a couple testifiers to come up. And I didn't bring everybody that I had in the policy committee, but I wanted you to get a sense of how this might work with negotiations. And so I have the superintendent in Fridley and the head of the teachers union in Fridley. That would be Mark Robertson, who's the superintendent, and Gene Andrews, who's the union chief. And maybe you could both come on up. Now, why don't you come over here, because that chair is so long. You'll feel like your chin is on the table.
Welcome to our committee. And Representative Sikora, would you like the superintendent from Fridley to begin? Will you please introduce yourself for the record, say your name, and begin your testimony?
Madam Chair, my name is Mark Robertson. I am superintendent for the school, serve the community and students and staff there in that school district, District 14, in the north end of the metro area.
And Superintendent, we're delighted to have you here today to talk about something that has been on our minds for a long time. So, thank you.
Well, Jean and I have not scripted this, so I will start, and I hate to leave her with the remaining thing, but I will just talk a little bit about Fridley's story. And we have been, we are not full-fledged into alternative compensation, but what we are doing is, experimenting is perhaps a bad word, but we are working with the components that the Milken Family Foundation model of TAP has, and those are the components of staff development, the potential for teachers to do things other than classroom work and show leadership in those areas, and then the whole piece of looking at data and student work to try to make instructional improvement, which all of it results in improved student achievement, hopefully. And so we received a $100,000 grant this year that we utilized for beginning work in this. We have worked collaboratively with our local union to try to work with this over the last couple of months, and we're 2.5 months into this, and we've identified temporary master teachers and mentor teachers that are working as leaders. We've trained our staff, both administratively and teaching staff, with 4 full days of TAP training, which is very intense and very valuable, by the way, and we're just getting into the first results of that. And I'm not sure what detail, but I can say that we're pleased so far. I will tell you that this is a huge culture change in schools. When you organize a school with regular, very pointed staff development that's looking at student data, that's a different paradigm than people are used to. Teachers, because of their workload and their busyness, typically work in isolation. And unless there's purposeful systems put in place to force the issue, we often get busy, so that we are not working together in teams on the same page and so on. And so we have worked with our staff. Our teachers and administrators have identified clear goals that are based upon areas that need improvement in their schools, and they've broken that down then to find best practices. And then we are teaching and training those staff members on the best practices, and they are following through now, implementing those best practices, and we will do a post-assessment as we get down the line here to see whether it made a difference or not. And so I will tell you that those things are really exciting people. The alternative comp part of it, which is right front and center for people's thinking, is a scary thing for everybody. I'll be honest about that. But there is great value in these things packaged together in our mind, because we think it's going to lead to better student achievement. So I can stop there and perhaps and have Jean add to that.
This is an official call to order, members of the meeting. We have a quorum now. And Representative Sikora, would you like to officially move House File 1744?
I would move House File 1744 before the committee and recommend that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Sikora. Welcome, Ms. Andrews, to our committee. Fridley is well represented today. Even in the audience, Fridley is well represented. So, welcome to our committee. State your name for the record and begin your testimony.
I'm Jean Andrews. I teach sixth grade at Fridley Middle School. I've been there forever, 37 years. And I also happen to be the union president and have been doing that job for a while. As union president, as I mentioned last time, I'm the guardian of the contract and salaries and the lanes and steps, and that's very important to me because that's our family income, and that's how we support our families as we work through our job in education. But the other hat that I wear proudly is making sure that we do what education needs to do for our professionals so that we can do the best job that we can for kids, and so that test scores and academics can improve, that students can have an environment that's safe, where they can learn, where parents can learn from us, and it really, really become a working environment for everybody in the community. And in that vein, I think that the TAP program that we have entered into has really helped us to focus on the test scores and the data that we have from our students, We know where our weaknesses are. We know where we need to do work. And work means time, and it needs and translates into money. The biggest gift that any teacher could be given would be more time. And so far, there's still just 24 hours in the day. And we have to get home, and we have to still do our things with our families. So time is important. And I'm glad to see that TAP recognizes the kind of time that teachers put in with their colleagues, that time in front of the classroom is really important. I left my classroom this afternoon really at Mr. Hepperson's request, and I really didn't want to because I don't like to do that. But I understand that the time we put in here is going to be important for decision makers like yourselves to make decisions about what we need, and we need more time. Time takes more money. And that collaborative time that we have is the most important thing that I see out of TAP. Very often I can work long hours, but if I'm working by myself, I'm not impacting the program for students that I could impact if I was working with my colleagues. And that's what TAP does for us. We, to give you an example, we're divided in clusters in our particular school. I think I'm with a master teacher, and she has a cluster of about 10 teachers. We've met several times, and of course right now we're working through a lot of the TAP issues because teachers are nervous about it. They know that it's something that is good for us, but if it's going to take away time from students and it's not going to translate into something really meaningful and systemic that's going to last, then they're wary of it. And so we've spent a lot of time talking about TAP, and we've also talked about particular skills that we need to teach, things that we have to do to improve our instruction so our students in fact can learn more. And so just with this little beginning of TAP that we have in our cluster groups, I can see that people are very accepting of it. They can see that it's time well spent. The minute you get done with your TAP cluster group, you take the idea, the instructional strategy that you've learned that day, you go right back to the curriculum that you're using. It's not an add-on. You take the very curriculum that you were going to use, you apply the strategy, you pre-test with your students, then you work the strategy, and then you post-test. So it gives the teacher really an empowerment of improving instruction and seeing immediately whether things work or not. Then going back to your cluster group and talking about how the strategy worked and the differences that we saw. Prior to going into TAP this year, our district, through our union negotiations, implemented a pay-for-performance plan. And again, pay-for-performance, very similar to this. And it was put in really at the wishes of our school board and our superintendent. And so we dipped our toe in the waters and we tried it. And prior to starting TAP, then we were doing the pay-for-performance, where each site looked at test data. We created specific goals for our site. We pre-tested and we worked through the year. And we're getting to the point where we're post-testing. We just got BST scores back from, I don't know if you know.
I heard it last night.
They're 85%, and so our reading scores in Fridley dramatically increased, and we believe that it is because we had a systemic approach to teaching reading strategies. And those are the kinds of things that paper performance run through set us up for being very open-minded about TAP and going into that. While I say that with much enthusiasm with TAP, I still am the guardian of those steps and lanes, and people are, in order to have a program work, people have to willingly go into it. They have to be motivated, and I do that with my students. Before I can teach them a bit of math, I have to motivate them about math. So we need to keep our teachers very motivated about the program and know that they're not at risk in terms of their salary, and that people aren't going to lose salary so other people can gain salary. We need additional funds to get the time that we need to do the TAP program or to do this kind of a specific strategies and instruction program. So that's where we're at. We're so far looking forward to the rest of our practice year. At the end of this year, our staff, our union members, will again take a vote on TAP to put it into in action for next year. We're excited about it, and we're very hopeful that that will in fact happen.
Thank you very much. Members, are there questions for Superintendent Robertson or Ms. Andrews? Okay, seeing none, let's call forth Would you like Pat Olson next, Representative Sikora?
I think only if there's a specific question.
Okay.
For her. I think at this point, there were a couple of other people who I think had mentioned they wanted to
testify. So are there others who'd like to testify in support of the bill? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Michael Miller, why don't you come forth? And Charlie Kite, you can both be there together. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kite. Please say your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director of MASA, and our association represents school superintendents of the state of Minnesota, as well as the assistant superintendents and the special education directors. Thank you for giving me this bit of time today. First of all, I would like to start by saying that MASA is, and our superintendents are supportive of this bill. Now, in saying that, I have to tell you that we're still scratching our heads on exactly how to do it and how to get through the process of getting agreement to implement it. I would like to share with you a couple of things, however, that came out of a meeting yesterday. We had about 12 of our top superintendents met with Commissioner Segrin and Deputy Commissioner Chaz Anderson over at the Department of Education. And since that meeting was yesterday afternoon, we really hadn't had a chance to process any amendments or anything. But I just want to make three points that relate to kind of the finance side of this particular bill. The first one is that there was considerable discussion and concern about the clause that said you had to eliminate the steps and lanes part of the contract. And there was a feeling that if there could be a way that we could transition away from it rather than to eliminate it or blow it up right at day one, it would work better. And part of the reason for that is that that existing set of numbers that identify salary helps both school districts to know what their cost basis is at the base, and it also helps employees to kind of know where they are at the base. So we think we could transition rather than just eliminate. The second thing that came up, actually the second and third thing I'm going to address are somewhat interrelated. The second thing has to do with there only being enough funding for some school districts to participate. And our suggestion is, if we had a magic wand, is that you would allow all districts to participate if they wanted to, and then if more than half actually did participate, that in second year of the biennium, if you had to make a supplementary budget change, you would do so. Let me share why we're thinking that. One of the problems that I think we're going to have is for our teachers' unions and management, each school district, are going to have to come together in a fairly intricate and trusting dance in order to make this happen. And if we go through that process and ultimately get to the point of requesting that we would be included in the QComp process or funding, and then to find out that the funding had all been taken up, you're going to have had a significant effort and a significant movement that could end up just being stymied. Now, when we polled the superintendents yesterday, we actually found that about 10 or 11 out of the 12 believed that they would be able to move their districts in this direction. But their concern was is if a portion of them spent all the time trying to do this and got and used a lot of their the trust in their relationship that they have with their employees and then find that nothing comes of it, that's a real concern. So we would prefer to see this be open to every district, and then we'll see how many participate. Now, if that can't happen, it brings me to the third point. The third concern was this, is that this funding is open to both charter schools and to traditional school districts. This particular change is probably going to be accomplished easier in our very small districts and in charter schools than it will be accomplished in our large, more complex districts. And it will simply take more time to get this all done. So if we just let us operate on a first-come, first-served basis for the funding, I can almost predict to you that the little districts and the charter schools are going to get there first, and these larger, more complex districts, which are going to take more time to get their deal done, are going to end up not getting funded. So either we would suggest that you allow everybody to be funded if they want to, or if you can't do that, create a clause in here that would create a proportionality of allocation of the funding between the regular districts and the charter districts. As an example, if the charter districts made up 10% of the student body in the state, that they would have a chance to get at 10% of the money, the traditional districts getting at their proportional share. That would be a second way of approaching this. Frankly, we like the idea of turning everybody loose. I'll tell you that 4 months ago when we were hearing this, every superintendent was very skeptical. Today, while they're all still scratching their heads and trying to figure out how to do this, there is some significant movement going on already, and I think there's the potential for a fair change to actually happen here. So that's my testimony. I think Mike Miller has a little bit that will actually share with you how some of the momentum is starting to build.
Thank you, Mr. Kite, and welcome to our committee, Mr. Miller. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Miller, Dean of the College of Education at Minnesota State Mankato, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. We have been in conversation with partnership districts and the Big Nine districts. There's significant overlap between those two groups of districts and superintendents, but we've been in conversation over the last few months regarding this particular bill and the notion, and have recently been asked as a university to put together a proposal for providing, in collaboration with those districts, three of the four pillars of QCOM. Obviously, the alternative pay structures and those issues are primarily school district matters and in negotiation. But the assessment of teaching as well as professional activity, the career ladder notion with the preparation and support of mentor and master teachers, and then the just-in-time professional development notion, we've made significant progress on at the university and have a 15-page proposal that I'll be presenting to both sets of superintendents. Again, that came to us to ask us if we had the capacity and the flexibility to try to provide that to them if they indeed went that direction. So there have been multiple conversations with the teachers and superintendents in those districts and the college faculty and administration, and we are making great progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Are there questions? No, there are no questions. Representatives.
I'd just like to make one comment that I think addresses something Mr. Kite said, and that was talking about the difficulty of larger districts to get ramped up in time to do it and to get some of the money. But actually, you know, a larger district can start with a couple of school sites. You can go with one school site as long as the teachers in that site, you know, are interested in and have an agreement to go forward. Because there are some districts, as you know, Minneapolis has got, I believe, about four schools in the program now and is planning, I believe, on having another seven in the program next year. So they are kind of doing it a couple sites at a time. And next year they will actually have a high school in the program, which will be interesting because so far they're, you know, K and K through 8 type grades. But that's just if that's helpful.
Representative Hyde-Gerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if I don't like picking on the author of the bill, but I don't know who can answer this for me. I still have some questions. First of all, when I read through the bill, the intent of the bill looks like it's including charter schools. My question is, I'm not very familiar with charter schools. I have none in my district. Do the charter schools have steps and lanes? Does anybody answer that?
Mr. Kite.
Representative Hyde-Gerken and members of the committee, I'm speaking a little bit beyond my knowledge base here. You know, the folks in the charter schools would know this better, but I've worked with some charter schools, and I think there's a range. I do think that charter schools that have been established for a bit and have a little bit of a track record actually do have a salary schedule that's worked out, and I think it looks more similar to the steps and lanes than anything else.
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you. You know, I'm looking at the intent. Whenever I look at legislation, I look at the intent of legislation, and we're looking at doing reform. And I'm for reform as a former school teacher, and the steps and lanes have been around a long time, and I think we need to look at that. And I was over at Waseca, and I saw the program at work there, and it seems to be working quite well. The issue here we have mentioned, and I don't know if we can answer this question, St. Francis La Crescent in Burnsville, and Waseca, I know, has the TAP program in place, but they received some federal funds. Now, the other school districts that have this in place, I don't know if can answer this, where are they getting the monies for this? It's more expensive to do this, I would think, with the mentor program and everything. How are they able to afford implementing a program such as this without the added dollars that perhaps, I think you perhaps need to do this?
Representative Sikora.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, districts will plan, and as soon as they then begin their first year of this program, they will have funding. But they would spend their time planning, putting together their contract, et cetera, making sure that they have the right teachers in the right positions, and then they would begin to implement their program in the next year, assuming it takes, you know, up to 6 months or so to get prepared, as, you know, Fridley is doing right now, but they do have a grant. They have one of the early grants that came. And I don't believe there's grant money to get ramped up on this, is there?
Yeah, I could speak to this, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr.
Kite. My sense is that the district, such as Fridley, who's sitting right here, actually speak for themselves, they got a small grant to begin the professional development side of this. There's some other districts, some clusters of districts, where they're getting together and teacher leaders and superintendents are getting together and having discussions right now. They're not getting any money at all. They're also only sort of setting the stage, so to speak. When you think about where the money will go once a program is adopted, like right now we're talking about $260 a student, a portion of that money will need to be spent on hiring the mentor and the mentor teachers and the master mm-hmm. teachers. Mm-hmm. Another portion of the money would need to be spent on the fairly intense professional development that's involved in trying to do the evaluations and the cluster grouping. And then a third portion of the money would actually be spent on the performance incentive type of pay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Sikora.
You know, I had the Milken Foundation, one of the heads of the Milken Foundation, in here mm-hmm. for the hearing in the policy committee. And I didn't want to ask him to come here again today for this hearing, but he indicated to me that they are very excited about Minnesota's interest in this and that they will be bringing people in to help with the training. So I think the training is going to be available without it being at your expense.
Mr. Miller, would you like to comment also?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just say that the conversations, Waseca is one of our partnership districts, and the Big Nine superintendents have significant experience with this one within the superintendents, and the teachers at the table have been interesting to talk with as well. I think the purpose for having them come to us was to take a look at our capacity to provide some of the pieces in a fashion that might be more economically possible for districts. And so we actually are putting together some financial models that that would may be able to do it for less and do it in a way that actually doesn't have some of the problems that Waseca has experienced. So we're all trying to be problem solvers about actually how to get that done in anticipation for the state money, actually, the governor's budget and this particular bill.
Superintendent Robertson.
Madam Chair, Representative, we did get, I said, $100,000 grant, which just to get some basic components going for this spring. A year ago, when we worked with our local union to negotiate the teacher contract, we talked a lot about focus and about focusing our staff on student needs. And we had, frankly, we had some issues related to student achievement in math and reading and really felt the need to focus. And so And I commend our union for being open to that discussion. But I'll give an example, and I don't think this is it's kind of difficult to do. But Gene Andrews mentioned that we have $400 performance pay, which is based upon, which is sort of a crude example of what TAP could be, because it's more generic. TAP brings it down to a classroom level, but what we said is that we will mutually develop student achievement goals and best practice strategies by building. And so our buildings worked very diligently last spring to develop goals for this school year. In the middle school, one of their goals was to develop strategies for improving student achievement in reading and bringing those 1 and 2 A's up to acceptable levels on the MCA. And so what we did is that when we had a chunk of money that was available for enhancement of salaries, we set aside $400 and didn't just automatically put that on the steps and lanes. We set that piece aside based upon goal setting. My other comment would be that you have a figure in this bill that is, I think, 225 plus 35 local levy dollars. The 225, I would say, is in the base area that it would take to propel the TAP program forward, because if you have a ratio of 10 to 15 to 1 per master teacher, you start extrapolating that, and you have to pay those folks an extra $8,000 to $10,000 a piece, which is very deserved because of the extra time and energy and extra contract and stuff. That's where some of the additional costs come in. We don't think that the $225 is going to cut it for us. It's going to be a bare minimum, and we are going to have to take and reallocate other kinds of resources in our district. For example, staff development, money that we use, this is staff development, so we're going to slide that over into this program also. We've also had the discussions, and this is all up in the air yet because it's not law yet, but we have Title II funds, which are used for NCLB reasons and so on to improve student achievement. We are going to look at what we can do for staff development things to enhance and augment the $225. So there are some ways to do it, but clearly if you're going to make this work, I think you need some significant source of funding, as is proposed in this bill, to help make the thing happen. And the kind of the question becomes for me is that we talk about it, but to really make it happen, this is a culture change, and Gene mentioned that prior to this, it's a true professionalization of what takes place in the classroom, because it systematizes what we want to be doing, and we don't have the time right now to put that into place. So,
Ms. Andrews.
Madam Chairperson and Representatives, I just wanted to give you another look at what we do when we talk about the staffing of this and people who would be the mentor and the master teachers. They're taken from within our ranks. Mm-hmm. And so a master teacher, to be truly effective, has to be in the classroom teaching to try these new strategies that we're working on. So when we pull them out of the classroom to be a master teacher, they don't give up classroom responsibilities. They try these strategies, the instructional strategies, with students that they're assigned to perhaps half of the day. And then when they work with the cluster teachers, they have more credibility because they're having to do the same thing they're asking us to do and asking us to reflect upon with our students. I think that's a key component. The other thing is that very often we have wonderful teachers who retire, and in their retirement we're losing tons of knowledge. We're losing so much valuable information and input that our young people could learn from the veteran teachers. Some veteran teachers want to retire and go away and go fishing. Some of us do not. And this kind of a program allows for keeping those people in the system and gaining the valuable training that they have and passing that on to the new teachers and really making it a stronger program for the new people coming in. So I think that's a huge part of the TAP program or any program like this that you would want to understand and see in action.
Representative Heidgerken, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I did have a couple of follow-ups here. I have a little concern about the minute we started taking, I like the mentor program and everything else and seeing how it worked. But I'm a little careful here of taking teachers out of the classroom where they're only teaching a half a day. I don't like where the universities have gone, put it that way, when you've got teachers that only half the professors may be teaching at any given time and the other ones are overseers or whatever, they're experts in their field and they didn't do it, you know, or what they're supposed to be doing. But my question has to, and I want to had a follow-up. What is the cost per student? to do this up and over what it is right now. I'm just trying to look at if we're going to eventually implement this program throughout the state of Minnesota, how much more money is it going to cost to implement a program like this over the entire state with our 850,000, 900,000 students?
Okay, let me...
Mr. Robertson.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative. Let me clarify one thing. First of all, we're doing what's called PAP. That's the Millikan Family Model. QComp is a PAP is a subset of QComp. Mm-hmm. So PAP is very prescriptive, and it has a number of steps that they say you must include. But what we have, in talking to the PAP folks from Millikan, it can be done anywhere from 200, 300, but 200 would be about a baseline. They're telling us maybe slightly less than that. But to do it effectively, you know, sometimes there are things that you either do them or you don't, and you try to bleed them off to be too thin. And I'm already playing with our budgets with the $225 figure. We are not going to be able to get down to a 10 or 12 to 1 master teacher ratio. It's probably going to be one master teacher in each elementary school with about 20 teachers or 19 teachers. So, but I think that we can make that work. And so the $225 figure is not out of line, in my opinion, based upon what we're trying to put together in Fridley.
Okay.
Ms. Andrews.
Madam Chairperson and Representatives, I'd just like to respond to taking teachers out of the classroom. I agree with you, just as I had trepidation about leaving my classroom this afternoon. The master teacher would be assigned to teachers or to groups of students like I am right now. I have three distinct groups of students, three in the morning and a large group in the afternoon. The master teacher would not part-time leave that group of students. So if I were a master teacher, let's say, I would have my three distinct groups. I would teach my math in the morning to the three distinct groups. They would get me every day. And then in the afternoon, that would be when I would be released, and then it would be another teacher that would carry through with that group of students. I think we do a disservice to our students by pulling teachers out for training and too many days like this with substitute time. That's not good for our students. Sometimes we balance it and we say, this is the greater good. I need to do this now. But the actual program does not leave students with substitutes on a regular basis.
Representative Heikertin.
Thank you. You answered it quite well, and dollar amounts as well. The only, I'm going to get back to my basic question, has to do with, I have concerns with the charter schools. In the fact that they have, I could see them eating the majority of these dollars up because they have far more flexibility than the public school system does. In the fact that most of them have steps and lanes, et cetera, et cetera, in place, more so than your charter schools do. And I look at this as an avenue for them to be able to access this quite more readily than perhaps a school district in my district would be able to do so. Just a comment on that from one of the superintendents. Is this going to become a problem? I see this as being easily readable for a charter school. They can implement it tomorrow, but it's going to take a lot of work to implement it in the public school system. Correct me if I'm wrong, any one of the superintendents.
Superintendent Robertson, do you want to take that one?
Well, I should have been paying attention instead of talking to Barb, Madam Chair and Representative. I think that if you look at the degree of difficulty, the larger the district, the more complex. And I know the comment was made about the large district. I don't know where we fit in Fridley. We're 2,600 students. We're not the tiniest, but we're not real large. It's pretty complex to put it in place there. For one thing, you have teacher unions, and that's you may not have that in a charter school, and so you might have a whole different dynamic coming into play. I'm going to tell you, the trust is incredibly important in this. Even when we talked about our last contract settlement, I told people you just have to trust if we're going to, and they took that step forward, and I'm very proud of what they've accomplished this year under that particular method. So the other comment that I might make about degree of difficulty, I do not think in a school district our size that it would work very effectively to go by site. We have five buildings, and it would not bode well with our public, I don't think, if we have four buildings doing it and one building not doing it. Where it might be applicable is the Minneapolis schools, where it's so complex and broad, St. Paul and Okehanda, the most type of school district. But clearly, the smaller the organization, and clearly the dynamics of trust in that district or that charter school are going to have a huge impact on the ease of which you would put it together. All things said, if everybody trusted everybody, it's still a big shift. It's huge, and I don't know we're battling that many trust issues here. It's just it's a ton of work to get people trained and to have people understand what we're really trying to do and the depth that we're trying to go with training. So it's a big deal to convert to this kind of a model.
Ms. Andrews.
Madam Chairperson, I will address the trust. The trust has to do with that contract that we rely on, that I've relied on for all of my life in teaching. And that's why I feel strongly that the contract and the steps and the lanes need to stay in place, and this needs to be in addition. I've always been against performance pay philosophically because in my mind it would take away from what was already maybe not enough to supplement somebody else. So somebody was going to lose when somebody was going to get more. The people who pay more or that work more, the people who create the leadership in the district, the people who put in the time to have things happen, and that isn't everybody. I mean, and it doesn't mean that somebody that doesn't take on a leadership role isn't an excellent teacher. But if you do have that calling and if you do take on the leadership, I do believe that you should be paid for it and you should be paid comparable to what you're making during the regular school day. And so I was opposed to it because it was, in my mind, it would take away from some and give to others. This particular program that we've been in, both the pay for performance and the TAP, leaves the structure in place and then gives us the well-needed money and time that we have been asking for. And I don't think we've seen the results. I know we've seen the results of that training.
Representative Viskins. Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first question is just to clarify in my own math, which is probably wrong, and maybe Mr. Crow can answer. At $225 per pupil, how many pupils could we conceivably be funding if at that amount? In terms of the number of students in our schools, I don't know if it is 900,000 or if that's and does this amount? How much does this amount cover? Is kind of what I'm trying to get a handle on because I've heard different numbers. I just wanted to understand what it did.
Representative Dorn, part of the problem is that the governor, with his pupil weighting changes, has a significant difference in the total number of pupils in the state. We were calculating that that the governor's number of pupils is about 780,000 because of the pupil weighting change.
Okay.
And the $260 per pupil would cost about $205 million. And so...
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Madam Chair and members, the $260 is the governor's supplemental amount. The governor's supplemental budget, that's what the allocation for the QCOP program is versus the $225 that was in the original proposal.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Crow, then at $61 million, how many pupils?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Dorn, it's not $60 million anymore because with that higher amount, there's about, I think, $75 or $80 million in it in the first or in the second year. There's still about $20 million in the first year. And so that out of the $205 million, that would cover about a little under half. You know, if the total cost is $205 million at $260 million,
okay.
then the $80 million or so that's allocated is about 40% of the pupils.
I heard different figures, I'm kind of thinking and trying to react to some of the testimony of Mr. Kite in terms of know, but if we're in the situation where we want to include more, we might be in the situation where we can't even, we won't have as much demand early on as we thought. It's kind of a hard thing to shoot for. The question I would have is, we've talked a lot about the master teachers and what you've covered with the master teachers. Can you share a little bit more with the mentor teachers in terms of the costs and their responsibilities and how they fit in, because that would be another additional cost. And I ask it in part because my understanding is that in Waseca, that has been something of a concern. And I there was a headline that I think 4 of the 14 current mentor teachers had said they did not want to do that next year, and I don't know if that would be a compensation issue or just you know what triggered that. And I wondered if how many mentor teachers and how much do they cover, what's their timeline, and what's the cost for that component of what you're doing.
Superintendent Robertson.
Madam Chair, Representative, I know Waseca has their master teachers, and my belief is they're somewhere between $7,000 and $8,000 compensated. They have an extended contract where they would do, they probably do the regular thing half time, and then they do this other planning and staff development evaluations half time. Your mentor teachers would be full-time classroom teachers, and their work would be done outside the school day, except when they are doing the observations of their peers and doing the evaluations. So they would have to have a sub backfill on those very few days. They would get compensated $4,000 to $5,000, typically under a TAP model.
Okay.
And you would probably, the relationship between those two, the master teacher really, there's not a hierarchical, you know, line of authority there, but the master teacher is the person that is really kind of in charge of moving the program forward, and the mentor teacher fills in and assists with staff development activities and those types of things and works alongside sort of as an assistant. So the ratios, I think, are open to be developed. The TAP has a recommendation, I think, of about 10 or 12 to 1 for master teachers, and then they I think it's a little bit beyond that for the mentor teachers. And as I said previously, I don't think that we can quite swing it that tight, mainly because we aren't large enough to have two in each elementary, and so we're kind of at that funny size level, but that gives you an idea of what the costs are. If I could add to that statement on how the dynamic of this works in changing the culture, and not that it requires less work out of principals or superintendents, but what this is going to do, if you open up yourselves to other people watching what you do and you're discussing it in a cluster group, what it's going to do with the culture in schools is change the culture so that I don't have to do as much as a principal in many senses in an authoritative kind of thing, because there's that peer pressure there and there's that peer dialogue, and you change the dynamic between teachers. And they want to, I believe they want to do that. It's scary at first, but they want to do the very best that they can. And so what I want to caution you a little bit, and I don't want to get in trouble with advocating for the bill, but if you think that through, you know, the way that this will work over time, your teaching pool is going to improve their skills and better match the needs of students, but also those people that are doing staff development now and coming and going but really not applying that, that's not going to happen anymore. They're going to be applying that, and so the people that are at this end of the spectrum are going to get elevated to be stronger teachers. And when they become stronger teachers, they're going to get better evaluations, and ultimately you're going to have less people, and the giveaway, takeaway, you know, mine yours and I get more or less, that's going to, I think that gap will close somewhat, because you're going to have a higher trained and a better qualified teaching staff. And so my message is the student achievement gains, are they valuable enough long term to know that in 10 years, if this really works and we have, you know, incredibly, you know, consistently top level teachers, where you don't have to, you know, where parents don't say, I want this teacher, I don't want that teacher, where everybody's up there at the top, then you're going to have to, there's going to have to be a way that we're going to fairly compensate those people, even based on a performance model.
Ms. Andrews.
Madam Chairperson and Representative, I just wanted to comment about people leaving the position of master teacher. That doesn't bother me one bit, because when you try something new, it may not just be for you. And as we've gone through this as we've gone through this program, the master teachers that were selected and the mentor teachers that were selected this year realized that it was for a practice year while we had a $100,000 grant. We also realized that at the end of the year, the teachers, somehow we didn't work our magic and we didn't convince them. If they don't vote for this, we have lost nothing for the people who have gotten the training. They will be better teachers in the classroom when they go back. So if somebody tried it this year as a master teacher or mentor teacher and said it was a great experience, I got a lot of training, but I really feel my heart is in the classroom and I want to be in the classroom helping from that vantage point, I say, great, go back to the classroom, you've brought more to it, and let someone else come forward. I don't envision the master, mentor, teacher positions as always being consistent. It isn't going to just the veteran teacher. I would have loved it myself, and I just felt like I had too much on my plate. So I don't see that it's something that you get by being the most veteran teacher and that you keep for life. It's something that will help everybody grow. Thank you.
Mr. Kike, did you want to add something?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm coming back kind of around to a question that happened just a little bit ago, and it brings back the point I tried to make earlier that if a school district, the teachers and the leader and the board and the administration try to make this change, once you move in this direction, it's going to take a great deal of effort. It's going to take a lot of the word that's been used is culture change. And one of the things that I kept hearing from the superintendents yesterday, and I kept thinking about in terms of when I was superintendent in Northfield, was that in order to go down this road, there needs to be a sense that if you go down the road, you're going to be able to implement the program. And one of the things that I think scares everybody is that we're going to try to go down the road, and you're going to get a ways down the road, and then there isn't going to be enough money to do it. And that's why we feel that whoever goes into it should be allowed to be funded. There's another issue here, is if it turns into a race to get to the money, you're going to see a lot of sloppiness in terms of these plans. The best plans are the ones that take a little longer to put together. And the other point that the superintendents that I met with yesterday said is, if we feel we're in a race and we're competing for the money, we're not sharing our good ideas with anybody. Hopkins is going to be secret against St. Louis Park, against Eden Prairie. It would be better if they're all trying to move in this direction and they're talking with each other, because they don't have to fear if they're going to be funded or not. They rather are going to share their ideas and try to move things forward. And my suspicion is it would be exactly the same with people who are representing the unions.
Representative Sikora, did you want to make another comment before I call down Ms. Oswager?
Actually, I wanted to ask Mr. Melcher to come up for a minute.
Absolutely.
And just a little more fully explain the financing.
Yes. Mr. Melcher. Representative Bernardi, did you have a question perhaps for those who were just at the testifying table?
Yes, thank you.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you, our chair. I want to thank my school district for being here today. Mr. Robinson, as well as Jean Andrews, Ms. Andrews. She's my daughter's teacher, sixth grade, and my daughter came home so excited yesterday with the best grade she's ever gotten. She got more points than they had, and Ms. Andrews is an incredible teacher, and I'm sad to hear that you're not a master teacher, but I know the influence she has had on other teachers in our school district and students, and Mr. Robertson has done a lot of new things in our school district with bringing IV within and all those things, and I want to thank you guys for that. I was with Mr. Hagman over here from Medtronic doing another bill, so I would have been here the whole time, and his son has Ms. Andrews for a teacher, so I just had to share old home week, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi. Mr. Melcher, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. My name is Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. I just wanted to briefly go over the financing and how that would work in this proposal. The bill would call for the funding to be based on $260 per unweighted student. That's consistent with the practice in the current alternative compensation program, which is based on $150 per unweighted student. So there's no change related to the governor's pupil unit weightings here at all. It's just simply a certain amount of dollars per unweighted student. In the first year of the biennium, the funding is all from state aid, $260 per student for the participating districts, There's a total of $19 million, including the $3.7 million from the existing program and then the new dollars. That's sufficient to cover about 9.1% of the total students in the state. In the second year of the biennium, the funding is a combination of state aid and local property tax levies. $190 per unweighted student would be from state aid. $70 per unweighted student would be from the property tax levy. The total amount of dollars that are recommended for the program in the second year are about $79 million in state aid and $23 million in property tax levy for a total of $102 million. And the $102 million is sufficient to fund about 48% of the students in the state.
Thank you very much, Mr. Melcher. Representative Dorn.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Melcher, could you comment on why for that second year there, what was the thinking in having a levy component be a part of the funding rather than all aid? What was behind that decision?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Dorn, I think the feeling was that it was appropriate to have some mix of state dollars and local dollars, and I think there were some constraints on the overall amount of state dollars that were available for the program. So it's $190 of state aid, $70 of local property tax dollars. There's some local benefits as well as state benefits of going into the program, and so I think it was felt that a mix of aid and levy was appropriate.
Okay.
Representative Heidgerken, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, a follow-up on Representative Dorn's question. How can, I'm going to use some of the rural school districts now, with the governor's proposal, the discretionary levies, some of the school districts, if they implement them without doing this one, I know Moose Lake comes to mind, there's other ones, they're over 40%, their levy already. If they want to do this levy yet on top of it, and some of them are sitting there and they haven't passed a referendum for the last 3 or 4 years, and they want to do that too. I mean, this is putting quite a burden on some of the school districts after we did the 2001 tax reform. It makes almost an impossibility. Especially, is this going to be subject to reverse referendum as well?
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Heidgerken, this is not subject to a reverse referendum. It is, the governor has recommended that the QCOMP levy be equalized at $6,900 per pupil unit, which is about the tax base of Burnsville or Rochester, so that rural districts that have much lower tax base would be getting a significant amount of state aid to bring them up to that level of tax base. Certainly there is a local commitment here as well as a state commitment, and there are concerns about the impact that would have.
Thank you.
Let's call down Ms. Alswager. Would you like to join Representative Secor at the table?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll try to keep my testimony fairly brief.
Yes, welcome to the committee, Ms. Alswager, and please identify yourself for the record.
Jan Alswager, Education Minnesota. We want to recognize that the governor has realized that there are some key components that we also feel are important in an alternative compensation program. First of all, he has acknowledged that experience is important. So while it might not look exactly like the current Steps and Lanes program that we have in our salary schedules, that experience is very valuable and there could be some kind of a version of Steps and Lanes. We also appreciate that he's recognized that it should be locally bargained. It should be a local decision. It shouldn't be a mandate put on schools and teachers. Now, I can't resist but say this, but, you know, this is an issue that comes up in the middle of a cycle, possibly. in terms of a bargaining cycle. So this flexibility to be able to bargain this issue maybe outside of a regular bargaining period is very valuable and important. I have to add that after this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then staff development, and he's also acknowledging that staff development is important, and we appreciate that the department has been working on that. I do have some concerns, however, because the staff development language is not in this bill. So you do want to somehow make sure that this is coordinated between staff development and the alternative compensation. Now, that being said, you know, we think that there's been a lot of progress being made. We appreciate the work with Representative Sikora and the department and the governor's staff, because we do want to be a part of this discussion. It is difficult, however, to implement an alternative compensation program if your regular education programs are not fully funded, because what ends up happening is you're debating this issue about teachers' salaries. On the other hand, you are have a class size of 30 kids in an elementary classroom, or that you're cutting world languages at the high school level, or your special ed costs aren't fully funded. So we would first say, before you can really get into an alternative compensation program that's going to work, is first you have to fully fund education. The second piece with the funding is that if you want an alternative compensation program to work, you need significant dollars for that initiative alone. For instance, the $260 that's in this program isn't as much as Waseca is receiving, which is over $400 per pupil, and Minneapolis is actually quite a bit higher than that. So when you have those two levels of funding, it is an issue. And then I would ask you to think about this. Are school districts going to make the choice, and as Mr. Kite said, the superintendents want to move forward with this, are they doing it for the right reasons? Make sure that if you move forward with this, it's sound policy and that it's not the carrot that districts are choosing because they're desperate for money, like we had the profile money some years back. We would also encourage to make sure that there is sufficient time for implementation. Waseca had recommended that there's a year of the professional development first, and then the second year move into that evaluation cycle. So that's something that you might want to consider. But we do appreciate the opportunity to work with the department and Representative Sikora, and we're open to talking about new ideas. We just want to make sure that they're made for the right reasons, those decisions are made for the right reasons.
Thank you, Ms. Salzweiger. Representative Sikora, do you have some closing remarks?
I guess I would just say I think there's a great deal of interest in this. I think there are a lot of issues that will come up, and that we can learn a lot from what Fridley goes through, from what Waseca is currently doing, and so that we don't have to, you know, build the mountain three or four different times. So I think we can not reinvent the wheel and learn a lot from what's going on right now. I know there are a lot of districts interested in this program. I doubt very much that we're going to have more than half the districts wanting to do this right away, that many are going to want to sit back and see what happens with the ones who do it and learn from that experience. So I'm not as concerned about there being money there. And I feel that for the districts that do go into this, they'll want to use some of that staff development money. For districts that don't go into it, they may not want to use their staff development money for staff development. I don't know. But, you know, I think there are some options here. There's nothing mandatory about this program and nothing that says you have to do it this year. But I think it's something that's going to really professionalize our schools in a lot of ways and also raise the level of our student achievement, and that is number one in my mind.
Representative Sikora renews her motion that House File 1744 be laid over for possible inclusion in the finance bill. Thank you, Representative Sikora.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1576 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I will explain the bill. A lot of you have heard this bill before, but what it is, it's an alternative pathway. It's called the Teacher Training Program, but it's an alternative pathway to teacher licensure. And it is designed for mid-career professionals or others who have been in a profession, who choose to leave that profession or have left that profession, who want to enter teaching. What is unique about my bill this year is that in the program approval, which will be done by the Board of Teaching, we have an advisory group that will include teachers and principals and superintendents, which, of course, in addition to post-secondary institution persons and the Commissioner of Education. But it's very important that we involve teachers in the determination of what makes a good teacher training program. And after having listened to Ms. Andrews and Superintendent Robertson, I think we know how important in this day and age it is that our teachers clearly have input into what happens with our student learning, because it is about our young people and about their future. So just in brief, Madam Chair, this program begins then by a teacher receiving a contract from a district that is interested in pursuing this program. This is a year-long program, and so the requirements that would be demanded of this participant would be that this person has a bachelor's degree from a four-year accredited institution, has an undergraduate degree or a post-baccalaureate degree in the subject in which he or she is pursuing licensure and assignment within a school district, that this teacher candidate would pass the PPST, which is the Praxis 1, would have a cumulative grade average of 2.75 or higher on a four-point scale, have been employed in the subject area in which he or she wishes to teach, and, as I said at the outset, has a contract with a school district to participate in this program. Once the teacher candidate has the contract in hand, then he or she begins the training. And it's a 9-credit summer school or pre-induction preparation program that will be offered by one of our universities, I'm sure. And it's a delight today to have Mike Miller here to show you what Mankato, Minnesota State University at Mankato, is doing, because I think that he and some of his colleagues learned last year that we're very intentional about having an alternative pathway, and his program seems like a precursor to this. So that's good to see. During the teaching assignment, there's going to be a lot of responsibility on this teacher candidate. 200 hours in the standards of effective practice and essential skills. That would include knowing how to design curriculum, how to implement curriculum, teaching strategies, classroom management. And the candidate's going to have to do that, members and Madam Chair, on Saturdays or after school throughout the year. So that's going to be an additional responsibility, but a good one, because the candidate is going to be in the classroom with the students and can bring, I think, to those classroom opportunities at Minnesota State University or wherever, an opportunity to ask the instructors or the others in the classroom, you know, what do I do in a situation like that? It's so important for teachers to be able to share with others the experiences they have, because we problem solve at different levels, and we can always bring a new and exciting idea, even for classroom management, to our colleagues. The on-the-job mentoring is an essential part, and that will be done by someone within, hopefully, the same curricular area as this teacher candidate. There will be supervision and evaluation arranged by the employing district that includes this mentoring. The evaluation will be done by not only the mentor, but the principal, who, as you know, is still the instructional leader in our schools, and a training program member who has been chosen by the district. then a one-week intensive workshop analysis and reflection of that first year of teaching. I think a lot of us would like to have had that opportunity once we completed our first year. But this is an essential piece of this bill, and I think a very integral part of the success for this teacher. The teacher candidate will have a preliminary license, what's called a one-year eligibility when he or she steps into the classroom, and then following this evaluative process can be issued by the Board of Teaching a typical license, what we call the entrance license to the teaching program. This bill also repeals what's presently in statute, and I did a little research on that, Madam Chair. That bill was brought forth in 1990 by former Representative Becky Kelso and co-authored by Representative Bob McCarran, who was succeeded here by Representative Mark Olson. And it was great to go back and read in the journal and learn about how excited those DFL legislators were to bring forth the 1990 alternative pathway. So I'm delighted and honored that I can succeed in their footsteps and bring forth a 21st century version of the alternative pathways. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like us to hear from the superintendent from Sleepy Eye, because I think he gives the most relevant testimony for why this kind of pathway to teacher licensure will work so well in his rural district.
Well, thank you. Those are kind words.
Mr. Hagen? Is it Haugen or Hagen?
Haugen.
Haugen. Okay, I thought so. Welcome to the committee. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jay Haugen. I'm the superintendent of the Sleepy Eye Public Schools, one little school in this great state. We're a school of about 630 students, and that's really who I'm here to talk about today, our students and opportunities for our students, and the kind of opportunities a school, given options, can find for its students. We are a school, as I know many schools in this small schools are, that feel it's important that we offer every opportunity to our students that are available anywhere. And so we have really worked the system. Our school offers 10 advanced courses, college courses and AP courses. Our school also has 7 complete vocational programs. Anything from graphic arts and printing to construction trades, health, and even a cosmetology class. Because of this, we have had to work very hard with the Board of Teaching to get licensures for many of those folks, because many of those programs in a small school, those exceptional things we do, there's only going to be a class or two that get taught. I mentioned cosmetology. And as I go through a list, I just want to give you some examples of the things a small school can do. I want you to realize that none of them are from this bill, because this bill is not possible right now. There are many other things we would have done if this bill had been available for us. But for cosmetology, there's not really certification. The person we have is exactly what I think you're thinking of for this bill, though. She is a wonderful teacher who owns her own shop in New Ulm, a neighboring district, employs 3 or 4 other people to work in her shop. And she comes over every day for one class period and teaches that class and then goes off to her business. So she's an actual practitioner teaching our students. And let me tell you, as a past science teacher, she sneaks a lot of science into that class. And I'm very proud of that class. But I've got to tell you, what I really want is physics. For 5 years, our small school has been unable to find a physics teacher. None of our staff, who are all fully hired already, have the ability to teach that class. The only one who has managed to get a variance and teach it for 1 year was the superintendent. And I can tell you that's not a long-term solution. But I do know that there's a person in town who happens to be a city engineer who has a physics background, and I would love to get him in teaching that physics class, and I've joked with him a couple times about it. This is the kind of opportunity where I could get him in. He doesn't have to quit his job for a time. He doesn't have to go on for years and years getting prepared on a variance for years and years. He, in a one-shot thing, can get prepared for us to teach this class while teaching this class for us. And I'm excited to go talk to him about that if this bill passes. We also have a graphic arts program. Art Town, and you probably don't know, but although many of you I have got to visit with a little bit about this before at the policy committee. But we're a big graphic arts town, do a lot of printing. Our largest employer hires 800 people in the printing business. And so we have a printing class, but we were unable to fill that position. A person from that company, who is a printer, does graphic arts for a living, agreed to become our teacher full-time. And so over 3 years of giving variances, that person was able to get a teaching license. I'm proud has now gotten her teaching license. But what we really want is statistics class. Our school has gone to having all of our 8th graders take Algebra 1, so that now we can add an additional math credit for every single one of our students who graduates, and we want that to be statistics. We don't think there's another area that people are fooled more and need to know more about than statistics, but I know I'm not going to find a statistics teacher to add on in my small school without being creative in some fashion. But I know there's someone in our county who would love to teach that class, who would come over every day for us, if we had a program to get them licensed to do that in a creative way. Elementary Spanish. 5 school districts in our area, not just my one little school, but 5, have elementary Spanish programs. We just decided to do it. Let me tell you, the competition for an elementary Spanish teacher is fierce. I don't think any of us have hired one who's come to us licensed. We all need to work to get those licensed. And I just would much rather have, again, an intense, you know, 1-year program, something that gets them up to speed as fast as possible, than doing the over several years thing that we've been doing. And I don't think one has actually made it through the whole time without going on to something else. So I'm hoping that will help us. I also got to tell you that this year, we have an EBD teacher who is, I think, the kind of thing that this is meant for. We went 4 or 5 years hiring every year a different EBD teacher. Either they didn't work out for us, they were licensed, but just didn't work out. They've been in 5 districts before us, just weren't the quality we needed. Or they got their training in our school district in a year or two and moved on. We knew there was a person who could do that job but did not have licensure. She went 3 years for us every year, knowing that she could be bumped, but we would find when we advertised another person but who was licensed. And she stayed with us, got her degree, and over the last 2 years has been a fully licensed EBD teacher, the heart of our special ed program. She's our teacher of the year this year. I could not imagine missing out on having that teacher in our school district. Again, a creative way, a small school, the kind of things a small school needs to do to meet the requirements that we have for licensure and the necessary requirements. But I do need options. I need more options. I have left things on the table. I have left students unserved at this point because there are times where there just is not an option out there. And this is one more option that my school district could sorely use to get excellence in front of our students. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Nelson, were you going to testify also?
Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner Nelson is here if we have any questions of her, but I think one thing she can point out, and I didn't ask her to come prepared to do this, but I think she or our gentleman from licensing can remind us of how many waivers and variances we have still being issued for teachers in our classrooms.
Ms. Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and maybe Dan Bittman could come forward and join me here as I speak. We do have information about variances and how much those have grown in Minnesota. We have something called a supply-demand report that's being put together for members of the legislature that we hope will be done within the week. And in that list of information, we have focused in on what are the teacher shortage areas now in Minnesota, and what has been the growth in the requests for variances in certain shortage areas. And Dan has that in front of him, and I think I'll ask him just to read that for you.
Madam Chair, for the record, committee members, my name is Daniel Bittman. I'm the licensing director at the Department of Education, and on behalf of the department, thank you for inviting us here. As Assistant Commissioner Marianne Nelson indicated, there are a number of special permissions in areas throughout the state of Minnesota that Mr. Haugen alluded to, And the number of variances, special permissions, waivers, limited temporary licenses, et cetera, has grown exponentially in the last several years. And what this bill would do is it would provide opportunities for us to meet some of the training issues and provide some services for those individuals who are currently serving our Minnesota children to get that training required to serve them best in a quality format. Now, certain areas that we have experienced increases in are science in particular, physical science, chemistry, physics, who started out maybe as few as two special permissions in 2000, for example, with physics, and in 2004 had as many as 129. Areas like a science 5-8 that went from 1 all the way to 115, chemistry that went from 1 to 124 permissions granted, etc. And I could go on. The need is there throughout Minnesota, and we have an obligation to our students to provide options to school districts to provide teachers who are well-trained and have opportunities.
I might add, Madam Chair, members of the committee,
Ms. Nelson,
it's important for us to understand that when people get variances or special permissions, such as a waiver, those are only up to a certain point that you can get them. Just yesterday, I had forwarded to me, picking up on the superintendent's comment, Superintendent Haugen, a principal of a small school was begging the department, not understanding it's the Board of Teaching who issues the license, and we will work with Ellen Hoffman, but this person was begging the department to do a special exemption because a teacher who was a college science teacher had gone through with variances and was just outstanding. And this person said, I know they can teach. They're not interested in trying to go through whatever means there are now. They can't take time off. And I thought to myself, oh, this bill would be just the thing for that person to be hired and go through a special training. One thing I would like to just say quickly, you're going to probably hear testimony here today from people who are very educated and very committed, who will say the current system is okay. We have data in the department that suggests the current system is not okay. Not only are the number of variances and waivers growing by 400 or 500% in some areas since 2000 only, we also know that the current means are not producing enough alternative pathways. One thing that was confusing for me when I started studying this, sometimes if you take a traditional program, a traditional teacher program with a number of courses required, and you offer it in a different way, people sometimes will call that an alternative program. That's a more flexible means of delivering the current or the regular program, whether you're using online courses or Saturday courses or changing the way that they can do it. It's still the traditional program they're taking. What this bill does is completely redesigns the program in a way where we can expand beyond one program like that you're going to hear about from Mankato to the whole state. We can use the commissioner and the Board of Teaching working together in partnership because the Board of Teaching has endorsed this bill. And by working together, the commissioner can make a call with Alan Hoffman across the state. Who out there is interested in an alternative pathways training? Who has background? We can ask any school district who's interested. We can match them together, and better yet, we can convene higher eds from across the state to do this in partnership. They can request grants through this program to develop those special programs that will meet the needs. Finally, this is for career changers. I don't know of any other program that's focused on career changers. They're very unique, and this program is especially focused on them.
Thank you. Do you have any other people who wish to testify?
Madam Chair, I don't, but I know there are others who wish to testify. I just wanted to point out that in the audience is one of my former students, Brian Steves, and he, of course, works for our Department of Finance, but I want to encourage him that as his children grow up and he wants to change his career, I think this would be a perfect program for you, Mr. Steves. He was an outstanding student, and I know he must do a wonderful job for finance, but we want to lure that, you know, that kind of person to this program. So, Madam Chair, I just wanted to put that little plug in for my former
Thank student. You. I'm sure he much appreciated it.
I'm sure he's much embarrassed.
I can tell from I can tell from his face that he really appreciated it. Mr. Miller, did you wish to testify? I believe, is Michael Miller still here? Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's, again, a pleasure to be here. I'm going to ask a colleague again to come with me if that's acceptable. Mr. Kite has some words, and so we're going to the hip today. Last year, there was considerable conversation regarding the need for an alternative teacher program. There were a variety of testimony that really did take a look at what were the problems, focused us as an institution and I think as a profession as well on taking a look at what are the problems and what are the needs that we have in the state. And two of those needs, the drastic need for more special education teachers and the growing need for science, math, and other high need area teachers, we heard that. Last year, in the last couple committees that I testified at, the last one was Senator Kelly. I promised that as an institution we would take a look at that and try to see what we could do. Become more aggressive in not just doing what we were doing, but try to create other alternatives in addition to all the other work that was going on. And so what we did was we met several times with representatives from MREA and from the districts that we're in partnership with to talk about what's the nature of the problem and what are our beliefs about that. And then I also met with members of the Department Board of Teaching in order to try to see what was possible. And so what I have today is to talk about primarily, although I will have some other comments, is our program. An alternative program. This is a program that I'll describe in some detail, but it is a response to the problems of St. Sleepy Eye and Worthington and other districts around us and the ones that we heard very clearly from MREA. This is a program that is already approved. It's a regular program offered in an alternative manner. And despite what you just heard, we have data about the ways that we modify some of our courses and programs, and we're very concerned about how those work and what the data are that says that it's an effective manner for preparing a teacher. And so we're really coming at it with an approved program. Now, the reason that we can do that at this point is that the previous bill regarding experimental programs did require the on-the-job kind of notion within the program, and it asked the program be the entity that provide permission to that particular teacher for being with kids. Our program is built for teachers who are already on these limited licenses, so we would work in partnership with districts and candidates. The individuals that we heard about today are prime candidates for this program, but they would need to apply for a limited license from the Board of Teaching and receive that in order to be a person in our program to get prepared during that particular year. The program is a year long. The person is not kept from kids one day. It involves a summer intensive. Instead of the 200 hours, our faculty have come up with 150 hours that they think in the intensive process will prepare them to be with kids beginning with the school year, and we would offer some online courses and support through a mentor and online and video conferencing support from the university throughout that particular year, and they would finish the year with recommendation, if successful, finishing the year, they would receive a recommendation for licensure in the same fashion that we do with all our other students that do that. We've done this with some creative planning, hard work, faculty members meeting weekly since about September 30th to kind of come up with the course structure and the nature of the experiences and the assignments that would actually, in the faculty's mindset, get the people to that particular licensure. We received a $100,000 grant from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to provide the technology necessary for video conferencing And so each of these people would have a video conferencing component with the faculty and the university. And then we also were able to receive a half-time additional position to support the mentors in the districts as the program goes on. And so while there's nothing within the bill that's particularly, to me, worrisome, my testimony is that we have this program up and running, and we're filling the program now. We're trying to fill cohorts, so I have some brochures for Mr. Haugen and for other people in the crowd, if they will, to fill those cohorts. We have the courses planned. We have a flexible staffing model that's been approved by the university and the system to be able to fill more cohorts if we have more and more of these teachers. And so our goal is to have it go and to scale it up to the size that needs to be in order to solve the problem. I would say, this is another topic, but there are other strategies and things that we've created for special education. But for now, this is what I'm here to report on. This is a report on what you asked for last year and what we've created.
Mr. Kite, would you please keep your comments brief? I'm sorry, but we are really running out of time.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I always try to be brief. I would say that MASA has been pushing hard for an alternative pathway for mid-career people for several years. And this is one of the positive results that came out of our K-16 partnership. We've been working with the university and MinSCU and K-12 education. And I want to commend Marianne Nelson for pushing relentlessly on this. And I also want to commend MinSCU because, frankly, they saw the bill proposed last year and they decided they were going to get the job done. And I commend them for that. I would suggest in this particular case that the threat of the bill may be what was needed. And what we have now is one program up and operating, and I understand that Bemidji State's going to have a second program up and operating just within a few weeks. So we may have come up over the hump already. And so the question really is open as to if the bill is needed or not. But the work that was done here is what really got this roadblock unblocked. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Grodin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, congratulations.
Madam Chair.
That is the briefest statement Representative Grodin has ever made.
Madam Chair, just wanted to...
Ms. Nelson.
Quickly, the program that Mike Miller has articulated so well focuses on those who have a limited license. That is, of all the big picture of people who are on variances, waivers, special permission, limited license is a very small amount. And so the number of teachers who are on limited licenses in the areas are about 191 in the state of Minnesota. What's not very well known right now is that the growth in the need for these is going to grow even more than we've seen it. We talked to TRA, and we asked for their data about five-year teacher retention in Minnesota. And here's what they reported to us and will be in that supply-demand report. For the fiscal year 1995, 5,421 teachers started teaching. After 1 year, 30% of them dropped out. Then after the second year, another percentage dropped out, so that by the end of the fourth year, we had 49% of our teachers no longer teaching in Minnesota. They have given us this data from 1995 through 2000. In 2000, we had 6,200 teachers start. After 1 year, only 78% were left, meaning about a 21% drop. And after the fourth year out, we only had 57% left. The bottom line is Minnesota's retention problem is higher than that of the national average. This means, according to TRA, these teachers were not moving to another district. They weren't paying in on TRA. So when we add what's happening with the variances, exponentially growing, we know what's happening with baby boomers. We know what's happening with retention. We have got an issue that this bill is just designed to offer. It will supplement what Mike Miller's program is and what any other MinSCU program comes up with. The bottom line is we can now, with this bill, raise this to a statewide level and have all higher eds involved. with the commissioner and the Board of Teaching, so we're so excited about that potential, and we commend Mike Miller and every other higher ed, and we hope you will consider this as another worthwhile option.
Thank you very much. Ms. Nelson, do you have any final comments, Representative Erickson?
Just, Madam Chair, I hope that we can lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill, and thank you very much for listening carefully.
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, I guess I missed, why do we still need the bill? I was thinking that they are already doing it now and that we should be complimenting representatives. Usually I have to pass a bill and then hope to heck they don't be passive-aggressive about it, but it looks like you've already accomplished your mission. So I missed why we actually still need the bill again.
I guess what, Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, maybe I didn't articulate it clearly enough. What's happening is there's being response to the system because of your action last year, and that's good. But one program in one higher ed entity is not going to solve all of the program across the state. We need programs accessible to all school districts across the state. And what I'm trying to say is we've all been focusing on the numbers of variances now and the waivers. The limited license program that Mike Miller has designed already requires people to have been working. They already have to have a limited license. And what this does is opens it up far broader to those who are not already planned as teachers, who are not already working. So by virtue of bringing it up to a statewide level, what we'd like to do is supplement and maybe go, Representative Greiling, farther towards solving the problem. When you look at the retention data that's not been talked about, we're losing teachers faster than we can afford.
Did you have a final comment, Mr. Miller?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Limited license is for people with a bachelor's degree, is designed for a person hired by a district who does not have a license. They have a bachelor's degree and some degree of expertise that leads the district to hire them. So, indeed, this is a program focused on the problem and focused on individuals precisely described within this bill. So I just want to be clear about that particular piece. The other piece that was raised was retention. And, you know, please understand, I don't have any problems with this bill. I don't have any problems at all. Okay. But retention, any of these programs, putting people more into the profession, is not going to fix retention at all. The first bill, where we're talking about changing a culture, professional development, mentoring, support, that's about retention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I was about to make that comment. The chair will move that this House file be laid over for possible inclusion, number 1576 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. We have one quick bill that Representative Biskins tells me will take 2 minutes. He has been waiting patiently, and I think we should hear his bill. And this is something that we have all essentially agreed on, and that is the value-added issue.
Thank
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that House File 1587 be recommended for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, you have the bill authorizing the value-added assessment pilot program in your packet. That's quite short. And you have a very thorough summary done by our wonderfully capable staff in front of you, and that's also quite short. I'm aware of no controversy on this bill, however. I'm concerned that my good friend Representative Dorn may rightfully view all of my bills with a jaundiced eye. Madam Chair, if there are any questions, I'll stand for them at this time, knowing full well that we do have members of the department here to bail me out if necessary.
Are there any questions of Representative Biskins? Hearing none. House File 1587 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, take a quick look at these wonderful minutes. The minutes have been moved. Any corrections or additions? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted, and the meeting is adjourned.